Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL on CBS game every week on Paramount Plus.
On the Fan on this now Thursday morning. Mick Monagle here with you. 888-808-1019. That's the number to call. Me and Rami hanging with you for five hours until 5 a.m. in the warm-up show right here on the Fan. And we start with the number five. Five straight wins for the New York Yankees. They look like a brand new team. That's right. Oh, okay. You're going to have a miserable loss, disgusting loss Friday night against the Boston Red Sox? All right. That'll be the end of this nonsense that we saw for the last 2 months. And they have now gone on a five-game winning streak, a torrid pace of scoring runs, took care of the last two games in Boston, and now went into Philadelphia. Yeah, it's a little bit of a struggling Philadelphia team, as now they've lost five. Seems to be the number we're going around with, five consecutive series losses for Philadelphia, but to go into Philly, win all three, win the last one with DJ LeMahieu getting all of the RBIs, hitting a grand slam and a two-run double. These are games, and this is how I felt yesterday and watching it now. These are games the Yankees haven't won in 2 months. I mean, let's just, Nestor pitched his best game on the road and still not very good. And still concerning, and we'll get to Brian Cashman at 888-808-1019 and some of the stuff he had to say and Flaherty and why he's not a Yankee and why he's a Dodger instead. And they still need help in the pitching department, as we're still waiting to hear about Gerrit Cole. You know, he had a bullpen yesterday, felt okay. He'll have a bullpen on Friday. Maybe, hopefully, pitch in this Toronto series. Everything seems okay, but clearly a little bit of an issue with him. Concerned about just general body fatigue, a little bit of a stomach bug, whatever the case may be. Obviously, Nestor Cortes, as good as he was, and I mean this was as good as he's been on the road pretty much all year, and it's still a high wire act once you get through the lineup more than once. I mean, let's just be honest. His stuff has not played this year. It just hasn't. And it's when he gets through the first three innings like he does, it's almost like that's it. That's all you could expect, because clearly when he tries to get through the second, third time through a lineup, if he's ever there a third time through the lineup, it doesn't have that same bite. It doesn't have that same, you know, he could try and slow pitch and do all the fun stuff that we see when he's cooking. But ultimately, it's just, you're concerned about him. You're concerned about this rotation. I'm not saying there aren't concerns, but here's the fact of the matter. The New York Yankees, since Friday night in Boston, since acquiring Jazz Chisholm, since the trade deadline, have scored a ton of runs. The offense looks completely different. They're winning games. We haven't seen them win in 2 months. They're now five games in a row. And here's the fact of the matter. They have 65 wins, and nobody, not Philadelphia, not the Dodgers, not the Baltimore Orioles, not the Cleveland Guardians. Nobody in Major League Baseball has more wins than the New York Yankees. And despite doing what they did for 2 months, they were still good enough in those first 2 months, and they're good enough now to be as winning a ball club as there is in Major League Baseball. And you watch what they have done since, and you watch this lineup top to bottom and the difference in it. And DJ LeMahieu, who, listen, I'm not going to tell you that this is it. I've been clamoring for DJ LeMahieu to be designated for assignment. I want a DJ cut. I still don't like the fact that they're bringing him in late in games for defensive replacements where he gets at bats. You saw two nights ago, he comes in with an opportunity in the 10th inning for just a sacrifice fly, ground ball up the middle, something. to get a run in and try and win a game in extra innings against Philadelphia. He's unable to do so with a pop-up. We've seen him struggle to the level where it really felt like he was getting into the territory of Hicks and Gallo. And what has bothered so many people, including BT, and I heard the interview today with Brian Cashman, and I thought it was a good question, about the amount of time and rope guys have been given. Right, the urgency of the New York Yankees. And watching this team fade over the last 2 months, part of it has been the urgency of allowing Verdugo to be in the middle of the lineup, or, you know, obviously still throwing DJ LeMahieu out there. It felt like Hicks. It felt like Gallo. It felt like, hey, what are you going to do? This is the team. We have no improvement. We're trying to see if this guy can play. And all the same nonsense that we've been saying forever. And while I still believe that, and while I'm still concerned about DJ LeMahieu, by no means do I think a great six RBI day suddenly changes the narrative or the story of DJ LeMahieu. The point is that something has clicked inside this team, and they are starting to revert back to who they were at the beginning of the year. And they are one of, if not the best team in the American League. That's who they've been, even during the downstretch. They are a good team who went through unbelievably, mind-numbingly so, 2 months of being terrible. But when you look at it, they still have more wins than anybody, or as many wins as anybody. They've scored now, forget about it. They have more, they've scored the most runs. This putrid, pathetic, disgusting offense that we needed 2-3 bats, keep bringing them all at the trade deadline. That this one, we need to trade Gleyber Torres, trade Verdugo, designate DJ LeMahieu for assignment. Just clean house. It's disgusting. I can't watch it anymore. How was Boone not benching this guy? It's a joke. It's two good hitters. That's all they have. And yet still, the most runs scored in Major League Baseball. The best run differential in Major League Baseball. And that's not to tell you they're guaranteed to go win the World Series or that they're the best team in baseball. But what I will tell you is that I have a hard time looking at all of those, looking at all the stats I just gave you, looking at the first 2 months and 2.5 months of this season, and looking at what they are right now and saying definitively what we saw for 2 months or 7 weeks prior to this game Friday night against the Red Sox was who the Yankees are. It's probably a facsimile of. It's somewhere in the middle. I don't expect them to score 6, 7, 8 runs, 10 runs a night the way they have over the last 5 games. But this is a team that everybody told me couldn't beat good teams. Went into Philadelphia and took care of the best team in baseball over the course of this year and made a statement and scored a ton of runs. And won games holding on with the bullpen. You saw Leiter, the new addition to the Yankees, struggling, finds way to get out of it, swing and miss stuff. And then, of course, you saw Clay Holmes back in the game and right back on the horse, and he is their closer. You heard it from Cashman. You've heard it from Boone. You've heard it from the captain. That's Clay Holmes is the closer for this team, for better or for worse. And when you watch it, he is not a pitcher. I'm sorry. I know we can go over this Clay Holmes stuff over and over again. When you watch him pitch, he is a guy who has great stuff, great movement, and gets ugly at bats. I know that everyone seems to want to tell me, I got a bunch of stuff on Twitter. You guys are the best. Like, oh, you said last night he got a bunch of soft contact. Well, what about the almost home run or how hard the ground ball was hit by Harper in this game? Yes, getting ground balls, getting hard enough hit ground balls to turn double plays. The funny thing is, if last night or the 2 nights ago, if he got a hard hit ground ball as hard as it was hit by Harper in this game, they get out of it with a double play the other night. Easy. I understand there are issues with this team. Clay Holmes being one of them. He's not perfect. He's got the most blown saves in the league, but he's their closer. And watching this team right now, and if you look ahead at the schedule, they're about to come home from a long homestand, play teams like the Angels. They are as good or better than any team in baseball. And if DJ LeMahieu can be anything, I talk about at the trade deadline, I wanted bats. I didn't want to trade Gleyber Torres. I didn't want to get rid of Verdugo. I wanted to add. I wanted more bats than Jazz Chisholm, who's come in here and clearly helped this team.
I mean, they're winning games where the other night, for all of the two good hitters talk, the other night you got no RBIs from Soto and Judge. They still score seven runs. Yesterday, Judge strikes out in every single at bat practically. And they still can win a game and score a bunch of runs. When they have as many hitters as they, you know, and this is what I said. I wanted to add as many hitters. I want a bench. I want guys to hit. I want to have to worry about how to maneuver the lineup. And if DJ LeMahieu, who hit those two balls harder than we've seen him hit balls at any point this year, even if that wasn't a home run, even if that was just a double off the wall, the other taking a fastball away and lacing it, that is a DJ LeMahieu swing. And while I won't hold my breath, and I'm not going to tell you that DJ's back, what I will tell you is those two swings look different than anything we have seen at any point from him over the course of this year. And if you are looking at guys like Ben Rice hitting eighth, you are looking at Volpe, who got a couple hits in this game, hopefully turning around hitting ninth. You are looking at Verdugo and the version that he's given you the last five games. Gleyber Torres, who struggled in this game, again, another player I'm concerned about. By no means am I telling you Gleyber's the greatest, but he's hitting around 300 over the last handful of games, about the last 15 or 20 games. Let's just say since the All-Star break. To make it nice and easy, he's been hitting, Volpe's been hitting, Verdugo's been hitting, Ben Rice is hitting eighth. Now you've got, if you can have DJ LeMahieu giving you anything, now with the addition of Chisholm, and obviously the two best hitters in all of baseball, arguably, in Soto and Judge, now you have a lineup that actually can produce top to bottom. Now you have a deep lineup. And you add in some of the pieces that are coming back to the bullpen, right? We got Efros coming back, you got different pieces coming back to the bullpen, and they feel like a complete team and a swagger. And what Chisholm has brought here, not only is the home runs, not only is the base running ability, not only is the athleticism, but it's brought about some sort of feeling inside the clubhouse where it's, you know, sometimes you need a spark, you need a change. And maybe the trade deadline was hovering over guys like Gleyber Torres. Maybe the trade deadline was hovering over guys like Verdugo, or hovering over, certainly, guys like Nestor Cortez. But these are the kind of games where you head into Philadelphia, and you're playing the best team, and the crowd's been great in Philadelphia all year long. These are big-time games. You follow a Boston Red Sox series with wacky games, balls off the wall, all kinds of nonsense going on, and then you come into Philadelphia and you take all three. What they were a couple weeks ago is meaningless as the first 2 months were during that stretch 2 weeks ago. They are who they are now. And since the All-Star break and since the trade deadline specifically and since Friday night in Boston, they feel, look, smell, everything like a completely different team. And as you go forward here in this craziness that is the Major League Baseball playoff scenario, and you're looking at, you know, the Astros have gotten themselves back into it, but how good are they? You look at the Mariners, who have now, you know, taken over the lead in the division, but ultimately they can pitch, but they've added some additions. We'll see how they make the lineup better, where they got Turner, they got Arozarena. We'll see what their offense is. Baltimore has been on a streak. It's amazing, too, the thing with Baltimore. The Yankees lose forever. Baltimore loses right there with them. The Yankees get hot. They don't lose in Baltimore. It's amazing. They call up Jackson Holliday, and he hits a bomb home run after struggling his first time up. It just feels like the Yankees and Orioles are on this collision course to take this all the way down to the wire for this division. But you look at the rest of the league, right? Everyone tells me the Central means nothing. You can't count the Cleveland Guardians. You can't the Minnesota Twins, please. The Kansas City Royals, don't make me laugh. And so as we take a breath here, as a day off tomorrow and an earlier game today, and you have a second to think about these teams, both Mets and Yankees, we're going to get to the Mets in a second here, but you look at this Yankee team specifically, who's better? Who's better? Are there holes? Of course. Does Clay Holmes scare you? Yes. Does Gleyber Torres and his defense scare you? Yes. But you look at what they've done offensively. You look at the additions they've made, swing and miss guy in the bullpen, and the addition of Chisholm. Tell me they're not the best team. Tell me there's a reason why I shouldn't be pounding my chest, talking about the run scored, talking about the 65 wins, talking about the idea that this team is as good as anyone in the American League. And then you get to the Mets, who lost the finale of the Minnesota game, but take another series. But here's the thing with the Mets, right? And this is why I was clamoring for them to add at the deadline in a serious way. Because when I look at this Met team, I saw an offense that I still believe in, no doubt. No doubt. As should you. And top to bottom, I think throughout the lineup, they are as devastatingly good as almost any offense in baseball, top to bottom. I still believe that. And you saw that from Vientos. So we're going to have a conversation about Vientos at some point over the 5 hours today at 888-808-1019. But the offense was going too good to think it would last forever. Now, at that clip, and really since the All-Star break, the offense has been inconsistent. I mean, you take away the second game against the Yankees where they pounded the Yankees and, you know, Sal Licata said the Yankees are dead and the Mets have killed them. Thank you, Sal. I love this guy. I mean, he's constantly saying, it was beautiful. The Yankees have lost one game since and have turned their season around. But besides the second game against the Yankees where they scored 12 and the first game of this Minnesota series where they scored 15, the offense has been wildly inconsistent. Nimmo's fallen off. You know, you can't expect Lindor to continue on a pace of just being right up there with Judge as the best hitter in all of baseball. Vientos is still hitting, and that home run yesterday. Vientos hits a home run. I swear, I was watching the game with my son a little bit later in the day because I sleep, so I'm watching both games on replay or on DVR or whatever. And when that ball got out, I turned to my son and I was like, man, this guy's power is out of control. Because I did not, to go opposite field on a swing like that where I thought he was late on it and still have enough power to send that thing oppo taco. I mean, he has a 900 OPS. Vientos is one of the many reasons why I feel like this team is special and I was hoping to add more. Now, as you get further away from the deadline and you realize how many different trades weren't made and how difficult it was to make trades for buyers and it was such a seller's market, I understand what the Mets are doing. We can relitigate the trade deadline if you like. But my point is this team, as they're about to head into a massive, I believe it's a 10-game road trip where they are going to, you know, play some easier teams. You're going to see Arizona at the end. I mean, how important that series is going to be against Arizona. How important the series is going to be against San Diego, who you've already swept, and now you're looking to just at least take one of the four to try and secure yourself a tiebreaker with them. But they just keep winning. This National League wild card is crazy. And if the Mets are going to do what you hope they were going to do, it's not going to be about the trade deadline acquisitions, right? It's not going to be about Blackburn in the rotation and moving McGill to the bullpen. It's not going to be about all the different bullpen guys that they've added and really completely changed the bullpen over the last 2 months. It looks completely different. Now, hopefully you're going to get Reed Foley back, who's throwing rehab games already. Reed Garrett should be on his way. You've made the additions you've made to the bullpen. You feel a little bit better about the bullpen, certainly since Budo has been moved in there. But it's not about the bullpen. It's not about the rotation. It's about the driving force of this team that completely was horrible to start the year and led to losing, and what changed and got on fire and what changed this team over the last 2 months, and that's the offense. And this offense, you live and die by this Mets offense. They have been the driving force of the team, and when they sputter, when they struggle, you are going to struggle. And now they're not, you know, really struggling. They've lost the last two of Atlanta, bounced back and couldn't score runs in this game against Minnesota. But that's the driving force of this Met team. And that's why I believe in them still, top to bottom, right? Marte hopefully should be back soon. I don't know the impact of that because you have better options now. You have Winker, Iglesias playing second base and moving McNeil to the outfield. So it's not like you've been missing Marte. The offense has been great without them. But the addition of him can help bolster, you know, this lineup. But ultimately, as they get right now on this 10-game road trip into the thick of things, into this wild card, as they now find themselves, amazingly enough, after being right there on the precipice of taking over the first wild card spot, they are now a half game out of this wild card spot. And if they are going to fight for the playoffs, if this is going to be ultimately the season that Stearns talked about at the beginning, where they believe they're good enough to make the playoffs, the owner told you that. They're going to try and build, which they certainly have. They didn't touch the major prospects. They are still building. The future of this team is still very bright and in capable hands. And they didn't get rid of any of these big-time prospects that I thought they could have for a different trade like a Scooble, and those moves weren't made by anybody. But if this team is going to finally do it, if this team is going to get over the hump and make it in this difficult wild card where now the Padres have completely, you know, added to their bullpen and brought in the best reliever moved on the market and have been winning and come from behind wins. The same thing, and now Arizona's, you know, having the same kind of tear they had at this time last year. If you are going to find a way to get into the postseason, it is going to be predicated on how this offense does. And you knew it wasn't going to last forever. You knew Nimmo wasn't going to be, you know, driving in runs at the clip he was driving in runs and hitting home runs the clip he was driving in runs. And you didn't expect, you know, Lindor to be the best hitter in baseball for the entire rest of the season. But as you look at this team, I still believe in what Iglesias can give you, even though he's cooled off a little bit. And obviously McNeil has upped his playing time, and rightfully so with his sudden hot streak. But you still have got Vientos, who's killing it. The role players, you've added Winker to it, who's gotten off to a decent start here with the Mets. Obviously, you know, you're still talking about, you know, Bader having his best career year and, you know, Taylor having his best career year. I mean, these are all the characteristics of this Mets team. So as we take a break, as the day is off today, yesterday's games are in the afternoon. You take a step back as both teams embark on long stands, Yankees for a home stand, the Mets head out west, or head out on a road trip. Both of these teams in position to do everything they were expected to do. The Mets build while competing and being a playoff team, and the Yankees trying to attack the American League and get back to their first World Series since 09. 888-808-1019. We'll get into the football as well, as football is back. The Hall of Fame game tonight between the Bears and Texans. We'll have a little fun with that. As I told you, I don't care. And I mean, no, you know, I told you I'm excited for it. And then I'll probably put it on tonight. And then the second I realize that the Bears don't have a single starter playing in the game, and I get three plays in, I'll go, yeah, I don't care. But the season is back. We got to get to the Giants and an offensive lineman signing and what that means for Evan Neal. And then, of course, the Jets. And I talked a little bit about it yesterday. We'll get into more about Aaron Rodgers getting into it with Wilson on the sidelines, and how much I feel that is a positive, not a negative. So we got plenty of football to get to. We'll start with your baseball calls on both teams. And, of course, we'll just have a couple of laughs as we take you for the five-hour ride all the way till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, taking your calls next. We'll be right back.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
McMonagle here with you.
I don't know what I did. If I slept on it wrong or something, I gotta go see a doctor. My jaw. Not great for a talk show host either. I'm yapping. Over the last few weeks, every once in a while, I've opened my mouth and I've heard like a click. No big deal. You know, a little click. It's normal, somewhat normal. It's happened throughout the course of my life. Over the last few weeks, I felt it maybe a little more than usual. And then today, just, I can't bite down without a little bit of pain in my left jaw. Do you have a left jaw and a right jaw? I don't know. Is it just your jaw and right side, left side? I don't think you have a left jaw. Anyway, 888-808-1019. On this first day of August, it's already August. My goodness. How fast does the summer go? The kids' camps are already over. Be back at school in a month. Football is upon us. And the two baseball teams will hit the first day of August with off days. And then the Yankees will come home for a big homestand. And the Mets will go out west and have, you know, some trip here. You got three against the Angels, who, by the way, are one of the more puzzling franchises in all of Major League Baseball. Because what the hell were they doing at the trade deadline? They're awful, right? Mike Trout might never play again, right? The guy can't get healthy to save his life. They're terrible. They just put, back on the IL for the 100th time. One of the worst signings in professional sports history. Bringing Rendon there. He was awful. He's been awful. He doesn't want to play there. He hates baseball. And now he's hurt again. And they have legitimate, they have Ward, they had Rengifo, who I thought was going to be a Yankee target. None of them get moved. Like, it boggles the mind what goes on with that. For whatever reason, that franchise, a franchise that really for a long time was the bane of our Yankee fans' existence. They were the one team that beat the Joe Torre era Yankees consistently. Someone asked me the other day who's my least favorite player of all time. I said, Sean Figgins. Because, you know what? He was a little pesky son of a gun who always beat the Yankees. They lost to the Yankees, obviously, in 02. They lost to the Angels in 02. They lost to the Angels in 05. But really, I mean, it's just been a barren wasteland out there, even with some of the greatest players to ever play the game. But I digress. You got three against them. Then you go to St. Louis for the one-game makeup. Then you go out to Colorado and St. Louis. You come home for Oakland, Miami, and then Baltimore. Good luck. And then, I think I misspoke because I said Arizona. I said out west, and I had in my mind, I knew the Arizona series was coming. It's at the end of the month. So at the end of the month, after that homestand, I mean, geez, looking at it, the Mets are hardly home. The Mets have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-game homestand in the middle of the month, sandwiched by two long road trips. And really, at the back end of the month is where it's going to get interesting because you've got a 4-game set against San Diego. And again, you never want to just go 1-3 in a 4-game set, but that's all you would need to get the tiebreaker in the series as you swept them the first time around, and then the 3-game series against Arizona, who's on fire. It is the playoff race could be a lot of fun here. And for the Yankees, it just feels like, I'm sorry, I know I'm Mr. Yankee Shill. We heard from Brian Cashman today. We can get into some of the comments. Nothing too earth-shattering. You figured what he was going to say. I'm still underwhelmed by the trade deadline, but as I get away from it and I look at the trades that weren't made and the trades that were, I really don't know which trade the Yankees were, and Brian Cashman was, asleep at the wheel, to steal a term from Sean Marash. I don't know which trade he was asleep at the wheel on, other than Flaherty, I suppose, is the one he's showing remorse or regret, I suppose. But ultimately, it feels different. The way they're playing feels different. The way they're winning games, I mean, there are a million things you could check off the box, from Grisham with the final strike on the game, hit one off the wall, to Clay Holmes coming back in and getting the save yesterday, to DJ LeMahieu erupting for knocking in. It was DJ LeMahieu 6, Philadelphia 5. You figure that out. And when things like that start to happen and you turn this thing around, I think they're a far better team than the 2002 team. We'll get into the difference in the trading deadlines and how those two teams are perceived as well. I was thinking about the other day. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your phone calls now. Let's go to John in Brooklyn. What's up, John? You're on the Fan.
Oh, wow. It's awesome. I'm first. I called in like when you first started and you talked about so many things, it's really hard to remember what I was talking about.
Not so many things, just Yankees.
No, yeah, of course. Well, first of all, let me let you know that if you're dehydrated lately or if you got a grinding problem in your sleep, then that might be why your jaw's clicking. Anyway.
Thank you.
What I want to talk about is everybody was like my own fans. They're talking about how they want to get rid of Nestor. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This guy is such a fan favorite, and he has never had an issue getting through the first first round through the order. Like, we need a lefty reliever. When it gets to the playoffs, certain guys make the rotation and certain guys don't. Right. But Nestor will most definitely be in our bullpen, and he will shut people down. Like, this guy, he's as much of a Yankee as we would ever want out of any player. And then I'm going to tell you also something about Marcus Stroman. This guy's a big game pitcher, and he has a track record for kind of getting a little tired in the second half. Put this guy in the freaking bullpen. He's got the intensity. Let this guy set people up.
Yeah, I don't see him as a bullpen. I understand your point about Nestor.
But team.
Yeah, but I mean, who's going to make starts in the postseason?
Rodon, Schmidt, Cole.
So Rodon, Schmidt, Cole, that's three. You need four, and I got to see Clark Schmidt come back before I just pencil him into the rotation.
We can get 80 pitches out of Stroman any time, but we can also get a bullpen, like just shut him down for me. Same thing with Nestor. Dude, the last three Nestor starts have been he's just shutting you down, and then you kill him next time through the rotation. Fine, great. You're not allowed to see him second time through the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, the Nestor one I can see, especially because they have literally no left-hand. They have Hill. He's the only left-handed reliever. I don't see Stroman going to the bullpen at all. Stroman, they just paid a contract to be a starting pitcher. They're not going to transition him to the bullpen. And honestly, I don't think his stuff transitions to the bullpen either. He really doesn't have swing-and-miss stuff, right? So, I mean, we talk about how much you need swing and miss stuff, right? I mean, I don't see Stroman going to the bullpen. And you talk about being electric and everything. You think he's going to transition to some bullpen role and be electric in it? Like, he's a starting pitcher, and he's probably going to be in the starting rotation come playoff time, I would think. Like, you're talking about a lot of things. I mean, one, Cole just missed his last start. Now, I'm not too concerned about it, but until he pitches again, I'm going to be somewhat concerned about it. Then you've got, you know, you said Rodon, his last two starts have been very, very good, and I'm feeling a little bit better about Rodon, but, I mean, has he not shown us enough in big games that I'm concerned about him? And then, you know, Clark Schmidt has to come back and pitch before you just throw him out there. Like, there's a lot of question marks to just be taking Marcus Stroman out of the bullpen, and then obviously Luis Gil, who everyone thinks is going to the bullpen at some point. And, you know, his high fastball, slider, and change probably project better in the bullpen than Marcus Stroman is two-seam fastball pitching a, you know, contact. So I don't like the Stroman one at all. I could see the Nestor eventually being moved. Joe in Rutherford. What's up, Joe?
My man, Chris. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Listen, you know, I was down there on Tuesday night over in Philadelphia, and I don't know if you can get more of an October feel in a July game than we had this series. It was incredible to watch, and you know, the fact that we were able to, you know, grit it through and get the dubs, like that's playoff baseball, right? It's not.
Pretty. No, I mean, if you look at the way they were able to, you know, squirm out of some sticky situations in the bullpen. Leiter came in, and I'm going to give Leiter the benefit of the doubt on yesterday. He literally arrived at the ballpark in the third inning the day before. He came in, he pitched a great 10th inning. Yesterday, didn't have, you know, his location wasn't that good. I thought Glaber, you know, could have made at least stop the ball and made a play on it on the base hit he gave up. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on right now. They went into Philadelphia and just swept the Phillies. Like, that is no, I don't care how many series the Phillies lost prior. The Phillies have, they're right there with the Yankees at 65 wins. They've been one of the better teams, if not the best team in all of baseball all year. To go in there and beat Wheeler and Nola the first two games, no less, and knock around Wheeler. When's the last time the Yankees went into a series and pounded the ace of anyone, let alone the best team in baseball?
So one interesting predicament that I wanted to talk about is, you know, I think it was in the 11th inning. DJ had come up with a runner on third, and he had popped out.
I think it was the 10th.
It was the 10th. And then in the 12th, when his spot in the order came back up again, they pinch hit him for Stanton. Like, why not pinch hit him right there in the 10th? Like, what was that about?
Yeah, because all you need is a fly ball. All you need is some contact and Stanton's a strikeout guy. He pinch hit him for later with nobody on, hoping Stanton hits a home run, needing a run. When you have a runner at third, Stanton pinch hitting, he's been a notoriously terrible pinch hitter in his career. You don't pinch hit Stanton there looking for contact because he's more likely to give you a strikeout. DJ's a guy you hope puts the ball in play and drives in the run from third. But then later in the game when there's nobody on, and now you're hoping if you can add to a run by hitting a home run, then you need a home run to draw to get a run or a double or something like to get a rally started. But really, you're looking for the home run there. That's when you pinch hit Stanton. But in extra innings and a runner on third, less than two outs, why would I put in an ice cold Stanton who strikes out a ton, even when he's going well, let alone just off the IL? I'm not going to put him in there looking for a fly ball. I'll put DJ LeMay, hoping I get a ground ball. I get a ground hole through the joining infield, or I get a fly ball. Like, I'd much rather take my chances with contact with DJ LeMahieu, as crazy as that sounds. Or it just didn't make sense. It wasn't enough of an advantage to then have to worry about playing Oswaldo Cabrera at first again after you've already taken out Ben Rice. Like, it makes sense to leave DJ in the game, runner on third, less than two outs. Later in the game, when you're looking for the home run, nobody on, that's when he pinch hits Stanton. Mark in California. What's up, Mark? Mark, you there?
Oh, Oof, I actually had you on mute. Hello?
Oh, you had me on mute. Well, that's the thing about mute is the other person has no idea they're on mute.
No, I was talking to my brother. We're actually just talking Giants, man.
And, sure. Let's talk some Giants.
It's Dude, I'm so aggravated at this Hard Knocks. Do you like it at all? Because to me, It made the Giants look like idiots. Like,
really?
Everyone,
I could not disagree with you more. I thought Joe Shane came off terrific in this thing.
I mean, you know what? I hated Hard Knocks for any other team, and I was really hoping, hey, the Giants never get a crack at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, this was a different one. I thought the last episode, the draft episode, the finale of it was terrible.
That was weird. Because
it was boring. Nothing happened. It was boring.
Absolutely. We were deciphering the board, and it looks like I had my opinions on what I thought the different colors coded were on the board, right?
Right.
And it seemed like, to me, the Giants really, really wanted Drake May. Like, really, yes. Really bad.
Who's struggling right now in camp. Apparently the Patriots are very surprised with how much. I saw one thing about.
It's funny. Yeah. The Giants were not even high on Malik Nabers. They really weren't. They liked Romeo over him.
They liked over whom? Over Nabers?
Dungy over Nabers, correct.
How could you possibly say that they both were available and they took Nabers?
Right. Well, because Nabers towards the end of his camp with the Giants came in and impressed them a little better. Do I like Nabers over Romeo? Absolutely. I think Adunzi is going to be just fine, but I think Nabers just has that speed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you're looking a bit much into it if you're trying to decipher the color scheme of the board and then tell me they preferred another wide receiver when both were available and they took Nabers. They obviously preferred
Romeo on the board higher than Nabers.
Well, I don't
know. They
could not have. I don't know when they did, but when they made the pick, they could have had either. So clearly, they preferred Nabers.
Right. Well, I mean, it could have been smoke and mirrors. There was a lot of.
Yeah,
I didn't hear anything on Nabers in terms of before the draft. I heard everything. Giants are in on Romeo. He's the guy they want. And then all of a sudden they switch it up and they're like, well, we're going Nabers. I'm like, interesting. A little move by Shane. He's great at the draft.
I guess. I think they were probably always on Nabers. I mean, you watch the clip. Dable's talking about I was watching film on this kid Nabers all night last night. He's a dog. Like they seemed to be on Nabers pretty early on. But why do you think they came off looking like idiots?
Well, because listen, next question. Here's why. Do you think the Giants disrespected Saquon Barkley?
No. Absolutely not. They didn't
really?
Yeah. Why would they what makes you think why they disrespect this is a business. He didn't disrespect them. They didn't disrespect him.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, they've been offering him contracts consistently for the last 2.5 years. He didn't want to take it. And then when it came down to it.
I mean, running backs are a dime a dozen. But to me, it's just like this is not the first time that the Giants have, quote unquote, let's just say, lowballed a player for what the value is really worth. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, one comes to mind, Odell Beckham Jr., right? I mean, that one comes to mind. I can name several others.
They lowballed Odell Beckham Jr.?
I think what they did to Odell kind of after the whole photo came out with Sterling and they were all posing there. Because remember, that year, Ben McAdoo, 11-5, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
They almost went in and beat Green Bay. If it wasn't for Rodgers' Hail Mary and Beckham just knocks him out of bounds, Giants are kind of winning this game. He drops the touchdown.
Well, but bingo. I mean, you're talking about Odell Beckham. How about the drop touchdown pass? How about Eli Manning being the only guy offensively who showed up for the game?
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. But I feel like when you have these bona fide diva players on teams like in New York, everything gets like ostracized. But with Saquon, is what he did to come back and put literally the reason why mm-hmm. the Giants made the playoffs.
Yep.
Is primarily because of Saquon. He took all the pressure off of Daniel Jones. If you do not have him that year, the team is completely different. I mean,
I understand that, but here's the crux of it for the most part. I mean, teams that their running backs carry them to the playoffs don't win.
Right?
They don't win. He's looking to spend money in other places. I get him. Right. I will tell you this. I think the one thing that he was clearly wrong on in this was his evaluation on the contract he would get. Like early on, his reading of what Saquon Barkley would get on the free agent market was off. Well, that's fair.
It was really, really bad. And I mean, everyone was saying you could have traded him at the deadline
yep.
or whatever else you wanted to do, but The Giants didn't want to do that because I ultimately believed, and I believe Saquon when I was reading his story and he was talking about it, is that he ultimately felt the Giants were going to come back with a better offer. Shane felt like he was going to come back with a better offer. And he just, like you said, miscalculated it. And what's crazy about it is to think of all the teams to sign Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
It's the freaking Philadelphia Eagles. And let me tell you something, man.
Yeah.
Even without their center, Kelsey, I think he's going to have a monster season.
I wish him luck. It doesn't
like a 20 touchdown.
Well, we'll see.
1600 yards. Season, maybe, man.
We'll see. I mean, is it going to bother you? Is that going to bother you?
You know what? As long as he doesn't do it as nearly as a Giant.
Yeah, but even if he does, let me ask you. You want to go over the number of running backs that the Eagles have lined up that have kicked the tar at the New York Giants? Hell, Boston Scott scores a touchdown every single time he plays the Giants.
Yeah.
Why do I care Saquon Barkley is going to be added to a long list going back to when Ron Dixon ran a kickoff back where the Giants get their ass kicked by Philadelphia every time they sing, every time they play?
No,
like it doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect me. I got to be totally honest with you. And no, I don't think they disrespected him. And no, I disagree with your take on how they felt about the trade deadline last year. They didn't want to trade him because they were afraid the thing was going to fall out from under itself. He's an important figure on the team. He was the completely, you know, the focal point of the offense. They didn't have anything else. And they didn't want the product to look so bad and the team to crumble around Joe Shane and Brian Daboll specifically. And then plus, we don't even know the other added element of the dynamic between the coach and the defensive coordinator. We know it now. We didn't know it at the time. The team might have been in turmoil. He's yelling at Mike Kafka, taking away the play calling, giving it back, taking it away. It just felt like there was a lot of turmoil around that team. And if you trade Saquon Barkley, now all of a sudden maybe the whole thing collapses and it gets so ugly down the stretch that yet again after 2 years the Giants owner John Maris is faced with a decision about how his team collapsed under Ted's coach. Like, nobody wants to be an embarrassment the last half of the year. Now looking at it, they probably would have benefited from losing those games in my mind. That's what I said at the time, and I would have traded him. But I think that's why they didn't. I think they didn't, not because they had hopes of signing him or that they thought the contract would be more fair and that he eventually would have to cave to their demands. I think they didn't trade him because they felt like it would completely just bottom out the team and no one wants to show up and watch the team be bottomed out. So I think that was part of it. He did misread the market, but he was never willing to go where the Eagles went. You could tell. He said, no, well, we're not going to go there. This is just the fact. Like, he was asking questions just to know what he's going to have to tell the owner. I think that's what he said. He said to the agent, to Saquon's agent, he's like, yeah, listen, we're not going to go there, but can you just give me the details so I can go back and tell my owner, like, what we're losing him for? And that's business, man. It sucks. It sucks for NF, for running backs. It's unfair. They are asked to carry the load on such a level. They are, you know, like guys like Saquon Barkley, especially guys who don't have that secondary piece. So many of these NFL teams have these tandem running back situations. But, you know, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, you know, some of these guys who just, you know, carry the ball so much and, of course, get beat up for the amount of times they carry the ball. And then when it comes time to get them paid, you go, well, listen, you're a little too beat up. Well, yeah, you beat me up. It's completely unfair. The market for the running back is completely unfair, but it doesn't change the realities of football. And I think Joe Shane did the exact right thing. And I don't care if he's in Philadelphia. I don't care if he's in Jacksonville. I don't care where he is. Honestly, I don't. I think the Giants are better off that they didn't pay him big money, to be quite honest with you. I am. That's how I feel. I feel like everything went the way it's supposed to go. He's supposed to get the best value he can get, and the Giants in their current predicament, in their current roster situation, it doesn't make sense to pay the running back that kind of money. I think everybody did exactly what they should have done. And it worked out where Saquon Barkley went to a team that has a roster much more complete and feels like they are a game-breaking running back away from getting back to the Super Bowl and winning it this time, where the Giants are what? They're not in that same ballpark. They're not in that same arena. They're not trying to, their reality is not the same. Joe in Brooklyn. What's up, Joe?
T-Mac.
What's
man,
up?
That guy's crazy. Okay, whatever. Barkley's gone. Let's just let it go. It's like
yeah, no,
we weren't winning with him or without him.
No, listen, I get it. It's the owner's time
to just get over this whole thing that Saquon screwed us over.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Oh, well, certainly.
He's gone.
Yeah, listen, I agree.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, and like the owner said, like he is the most popular player. So their fans are going to feel a certain way about it. But I don't think I think that other than going to like, I know Tiki said it with tongue in cheek. I don't think Giant fans should really feel like that Saquon Barkley is dead to them for signing with Philadelphia. I don't think we should hate him. You boo him when he comes to the building because now he's in an Eagle uniform, and I boo everyone who wears a new Eagles uniform. But I don't harbor any ill will. I don't dislike him. I think he did exactly what was right for him. How could I blame him? So
Go ahead. And everyone going on about this this conversation that they put it on the air and the Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Well, it's entertainment. At the end of the day, that's all it is. It's a business. It's entertainment. It's sports. It's like he's gone. Let it go. It's like crying over that girlfriend that left you. Like whatever. At the end of the day, yeah, it sucks. But you move on. That's it. We weren't going to win with or without him. And are the Giants winning the Super Bowl this year? No, they're not.
No, that would be something if they did. But no, they're not. And they're not in their rosters in the same yet. I mean, listen, I think he's one caller. I think everybody is kind of over the Saquon Barkley thing. I think it's going to suck when he shows up to MetLife and he's wearing an Eagles uniform. And I'm sure he'll have a great game. They have a better offensive line. They have more offensive weapons. The only hope is that hopefully, they get close enough to the end zone where it's a tush push instead of having Saquon Barkley running into the end zone. I don't know. But my point has always been with the idea, like I heard the owner say, oh, I'm going to have a tough time sleeping if he goes to Philadelphia. I don't care. I honestly don't care.
I'm going to sleep great tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to bother me at all. Because, again, you're talking about Boston Scott. You're talking about Westbrook. You're talking about, like, there are so many running backs who have come in and so many players. I've seen Jeff Garcia put on an Eagles uniform and beat them in a playoff game. Like, everybody in an Eagles uniform comes and kicks my ass. Now I got to be upset that it's going to be Saquon Barkley? What the hell do I care? The guy, as great as he was, they didn't win with him, ever. He misses. Exactly. He's good for 3 or 4 weeks missed with a high ankle sprain every single year. Like, it's just, I like him. He's a great talent, and he'll probably have a good year.
Yeah.
But he's hurt all the time, and the Giants aren't in a position to pay a running back that kind of money. That's the reality of football. They got to fix the offensive line. Hopefully they have. They've had some additions, including Van Roten, who we're going to get to in a little bit with the Giants. And hopefully the offensive line's better. Hopefully Daniel Jones can stay healthy. Hopefully now Malik Nabers is actually a threat in the passing game. And along with some of the other, Hyatt can take the top off the defense and go deep. You got Wandell Robinson able to do different creative things and get the ball into his hands early and make be a yak kind of guy. And then you have the number one wide receiver in Nabers. That's what the hope is. But we'll see what happens.
All these callers up at night worrying about Saquon Barkley. He's not on the team anymore. You know what's keeping me up at night? Daniel Jones. He's still on the team.
Me and you see eye to eye on many of the Giants' situations, yes. I am not that thrilled that Daniel Jones is the quarterback of the team. I think he's far better.
Exactly.
I think and thank you for the call. I think he's far better than what some people will tell you. Like I do not think he's the worst quarterback in the NFL. I don't think it's fair to say he's that. He has won a road playoff game. But I also don't think he's a franchise quarterback who can lift you and take you to where you want to go. If everything around him is perfect, he might win you some games. And I know nothing was perfect a couple years ago when they won 9 games and made it to the playoffs. He didn't turn the ball over. They did enough. They played a last-place schedule. They won some games coming from behind. I'm not trying to dismiss it, but ultimately, I view that season, unfortunately, as something that derailed a needed rebuild. That's how I view that season now, unfortunately. That game against Minnesota was unbelievable. It was a great day. The feeling watching that game, he was spectacular in it. It's one of the better wins, clearly, they've had since the Super Bowl, if not the best win, clearly, since the Super Bowl. But I can't help but look back on that season and think all it did was make me pay a quarterback I don't believe in and slow down the process of a rebuild that this roster desperately needed. That's unfortunately how I view that season, which sucks. but it is. 12:56. We can get more into the. We can take your football calls as well. Is that David or David in Rockland? We'll get to you next. In the next hour, we'll still take your Cashman, your Yankee, your Met baseball calls. We'll get into a little bit of football. Anything you want to talk about over the next? My jaw. If you have anybody else has a opinion on why my jaw hurts right now, you can tell me that too. 888. And I know Cashman was on the air, so don't get too creative with my jaw injury. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan.